Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT. Striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving. And nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank their creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Oh, please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, in the news or not, I guess. Leprosy, the Vaccine Act, statins, forever chemicals, and GMOs. I'm going to try to get through this because that's a lot of information. I'm going to try to get through it tonight, so we're going to get right to it. So just so we, you know, take a look at other things that impact on or could impact on our lives. Who would have thought that leprosy was not just a disease of biblical time period? You know, I don't know, maybe I'm not the sharpest knife in the kitchen. I had no idea. But from the World Health Organization, the WHO, not the singing group, right? Elimination of leprosy as a public health problem globally defined as prevalence of less than 1 per 10,000 population. So they're saying the elimination of leprosy right, is defined as less than one per 1/10,000 per population, as achieved in 2000, right? Per the World Health Assembly on Resolution 44.9. And in most countries by 2010, the reduction in the number of cases has been gradual, both globally and in the WHO nations, World Health Organization nations, right? So I was thinking that probably refers to third world nations, not the industrialized, highly technical, medically advanced nations of today. And if you was thinking that way, as I did, you'd be wrong. From Google, elimination is the complete removal of or destruction of something. Webster's Dictionary. Elimination is the process of getting rid of something. Cambridge, rid is to free a person or place of something unwanted or harmful. So I'm thinking, which I don't get paid to do, right? But I'm still thinking. Getting completely rid of is like losing an arm. You don't have an arm anymore. Or losing your money. You out of 10 bucks or 100. Or your ex, she's gone, you know. Or a bill or some trash. You know, it's just trash is gone. You know, the bill is gone. It's paid for. It's down to zero. That's what, you know, I think about elimination. Right, but apparently, I don't even think about it like that. I think about eradication, right? You got to read sometimes to even understand what's going on. From embraceofvillage.org, is leprosy in the United States? Yes, but it's rare. About 150 people are diagnosed with leprosy each year in the United States. Yes. I mean, people may not know what leprosy is. It's I'll get into that. From Yahoo Life, leprosy, Florida leprosy cases may be here to stay. Do you need to worry? Leprosy is also known as Hansen's disease. It's rare in the U.S., but cases are on the rise in Florida. Leprosy may sound like an affliction from a bygone era, as I said, you know, because you read about it in the Bible, that Jesus healed the lepers and people was, you know, healing lepers and stuff like that, you know. But the disease, which historically also carries a strong social stigma, may be more present in the U.S. than you might expect. Well, I'm in total agreement with that. What's happening, they said, a recent posted research letter in the journal published by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention says there's evidence that leprosy, also known as Hansen's disease, has become endemic or regularly occurring in southeastern U.S., particularly in central Florida, where reported cases have more than doubled over the past decade. The authors of the letter note that about 34% of the new cases in the U.S. from 2015 to 2020 appear to be locally acquired, and that several patients weren't exposed to traditional risk factors, such as close, prolonged contact with someone infected with leprosy, interaction with armadillos. That's that thing that looks like a rat with a shield on him, right? He's in a rat for war like thing. Oh, he's not a rat. I think he's in the rat family, though. I'm not sure, but which can be carriers of the disease, or having traveled to an area where the disease is common. So, leprosy is an affliction caused by the bacterium Mycobacterium leprae, L-E-P-R-A-E. It manifests as lesions and darker or lighter patches on the skin that may be reddish in color if inflamed, and lumps particularly on the earlobes or face. If it's left untreated, nerve damage can occur that will cause some tingling and eventual paralysis of the hands and feet, loss of sight and eyebrows, and deformity of the nose as nasal cartilage disappears. It's like being on coke for 10 years, every coke user. Do I need to worry, you say? The CDC, y'all trust those guys, right? Let's see what they say. The CDC has been clear because the risk of leprosy in the United States remains very low, and because most people do not develop the disease following exposure, this should not be a cause for widespread alarm. Don't be alarmed, says the good old CDC, right? Dr. Jose Lucar, infectious disease physician at the George Washington University, said the CDC also noted that a travel alert is not necessary. You can still go to Florida and not worry about getting leprosy, right? Don't worry about it. It's not necessary to parts of the country where local cases of leprosy are being reported, including Central Florida. Go enjoy yourself, retire, whatever you're going to do down there, right? Here's why experts say you shouldn't stress. Leprosy doesn't spread easy. Transmission still isn't completely understood, although it's believed to spread primarily through respiratory droplets, spit, all right? But while illnesses such as influenza or COVID-19 are easily acquired through droplets, the bacterium responsible for leprosy is so slow growing that only extensive exposure will result in an infection. Okay, that sounds like something that a mask might help you with and hurt you at the same time, because you know what they say masks do, right? Because it's so slow to reproduce, very prolonged close contact with untreated leprosy over several months is really needed to acquire the infection. So you got to be around somebody for over 7 months to get it for a while. You just got to just be living in the house with them, I guess. Sleep in the same bed with them, I guess. I don't know. 7 months, right? They say that's more than a half a year. He explains that we know that people don't get leprosy through casual contact. So he's saying you can't get it walking down the street or like hugging, shaking hands, or sitting next to someone with the disease. Most people have natural immunity to leprosy. But that's nice, because they're not talking about you getting a shot. There are different microbacteria in the soil and in the water and in the air that we're exposed to on a daily basis without even being aware of it. And that's how we develop immunity, they say. Okay. Some people are more susceptible to infection than others. So people who develop leprosy may have genes that make them more susceptible to infection, but that accounts for a relatively small percentage of the population. The CDC says that over 95% of people worldwide have natural immunity to leprosy. Treatments are extremely effective. Leprosy is curable, especially with early diagnosis and treatment, which involves a combination of antibiotics. So what can we do about it? Well, leprosy doesn't present a major health threat. Simple measures such as treating people who have the disease so they aren't contagious and avoiding contact with armadillos or wearing gloves and washing your hands if you do have contact with them are important steps. We have infections that are appearing in areas that we never used to see before, not because of travel. He says not because of travel, but because the bacteria and viruses have new areas where they can thrive because of global warming. This guy says, so I don't understand that. Was this bacteria taking a plane over here or illegally crossing the border? What's happening with that? How's the bacteria getting in? Through the water, the air? What's he saying? Usually you don't see leprosy in temperate climates. What we see around the equator belt, we see it around the equator belt and where it's much warmer. But nowadays we see bacterial illnesses that we used to see more in hotter parts of the country up to the northeast, just because it's so much warmer now. So is the playing So is that playing that's a playing factor, he says. So as it gets warm, so theoretically this guy says as it gets warmer, leprosy has an ability to spread, or the conditions are there for leprosy to spread. Researchers, findings mean that clinicians and public health authorities in the U.S. may consider Florida when conducting contact tracing for leprosy cases in the U.S., but it also illuminates gaps in the leprosy research. These guys are not really following this thing in the first place, right? Especially regarding how the disease is spread. Sounds like they really don't know too much. They know how it is spread, but they don't know other ways that it might be spread, or they're just not saying it. It says the need for more research and environmental resources to be looking into the transmission of this infection. He said, but this should not be a cause for public concern in general. So if you never heard of leprosy, you're probably not concerned now. But global warming has to do with disease that is transmitted by armadillo or people who have leprosy. Since the U.S. already has armadillos, I'm going to go out on a limb and say people are spreading the disease. Because armadillos are not, you know, strangers to this country, but we do have an influx of immigrants coming into the country and from countries that fit the description of where this armadillo originates from. And, you know, who knows? That's just I'm just throwing that out there. They said the non-band armadillo, that's the one, you can look him up, originally a native of South America, right? He's in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and as far as Louisiana, not found where the soil is too hard to dig. The armadillo, that's from Texas.gov. From armadilloonline.org said, the nine-banded armadillo is the only species found in the United States. These armadillos can be found in the southern, southeastern United States, including Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Alabama, Florida. Recent reports suggest that the armadillo has moved northward as far as Indiana and the Midwest. The CDC, right, said talks about the transmission of a Hodgkin's disease. It said it's in the southern United States, some armadillos are naturally infected with the bacteria that cause Hodgkin's disease, and it may be possible that they can spread it to people. The risk is very low. People who come in contact with armadillos are unlikely to get Hansen's disease. H-A-N-S-E-N-S, Hansen's, right? So I guess this is just my surprise right here that I've been doing this one, because I thought leprosy was some Bible stuff. And it seemed like people was afraid of leopards back in the day, maybe because a lot of them went untreated and what they saw was a little different. And I heard another explanation for what leprosy is, but I'm not going to get into it on this show because it takes you somewhere else. It would take the show somewhere else completely. Central Florida has experienced a leprosy outbreak, according to a new report from the CDC. This is from health.com. This leads researchers to believe the infection is endemic to the region. I mean, it's there. It's going on. It's happening. You know, experts note that leprosy cases in the United States, even including this outbreak, are extremely rare and able to be treated with the right medical care. As it says, antibiotics. I'm going to keep saying that. Historically, Florida has not been known as a leprosy hotspot, but the data surrounding this outbreak featured the variety of patients who come down with leprosy without leaving the state of Florida. So you have to wonder who's coming to Florida, the armadillos or people with leprosy, or both. This suggests that the illness is now endemic of the state. Endemic simply means disease or infection is consistently present in a certain region. The CDC has stressed that no travel warning has been issued for the state of Florida. All right? Go to take your vacation, right? How leprosy outbreaks happened in the 1980s, the numbers of case numbers were in the 400s each year, says Dr. Nathu, MD. Sounds like he's from India. Now it's about 150 a year. Case counts vary in the U.S. each year, reaching 216 in 2019 and dropping to 159 in 2020. I guess this is just not something that they feel necessary to discuss with us. Leprosy, also known as Hansen's disease, can spread from person to person, as I said, requires prolonged contact to someone who is infected. So they say it's not easy to, it's easy to catch, like, you know, seem like the flu. You walk in a room, you got it, bam, cold, stuff like that. Most leprosy cases in the U.S. have been in people who recently traveled outside the country, where leprosy cases are more known, common, or those who have direct contact with the non-banned armorellos, animals that are rare, that are known carriers of the disease, right? But there's a subset of folks, especially in Florida, that haven't left Florida. But Florida has armadillos, I think. I think they have armadillos there. So I don't know if somebody pet got away or the homie just walked across just like anybody else do. I don't know. Most common method of transmission is person to person, but that typically requires prolonged, intense, close contact. So somebody's up close on an armadillo or a person that has leprosy. So I'm going to take it as a person because armadillos don't look like nothing you want to be up on, even as a pet. It looks like a rat with that knight in armor kind of like stuff on, you know, just ready to go to war, rat war. That's what it looked like to me, giant rat with a shield on him or armor all over him. He noted that 75% of new cases of leprosy in Florida have no known cause. That's scary, 75%. Some people have direct conflict with armadillos, and that makes all sense. For the others, the question is whether there are environmental resources of source of leprosy that we haven't seen. So is this thing transmitted some other method through the environment that we don't know about? The air. We only got land, sea, and the air. That's all you got. In the environment. So when you have all material things, right? Like a chair or something like that, spoon, whatever. Or perhaps there's another animal that spread leprosy in the U.S. Suppose that's happening. Leprosy of being spread through dogs in Florida. Mice, rats. Not knowing that leprosy was never totally eradicated makes this sound scary and suspicious. But now we know that it never went anywhere. It just, you know, met the standard for what they call elimination. They need to change the terms anyway. Let the terms reflect what actually happened. Are people entering the U.S. with leprosy, or are armadillos entering the U.S. with leprosy causing the infection, or other resources of being infected? Is it airborne, for instance? And if it's airborne, then we have to question, how did it become airborne? CNN. I said, people are from other countries are fleeing violent persecution and climate disasters. That's the where the guy said talked about climate. Global warming. So people from these countries with an armadillo and leprosy is known to be coming into the country may be causing maybe increasing the spread. So we don't know. That means they're coming up here and hooking up with the people here. But it's spreading pretty fast. So I guess you have to look at who has it and who they've been in contact with, if they've been in contact with somebody that try to trace it back to somebody who came in from one of the southern countries, Central America or South America, right? In this case, our case. According to an analyst of this census data from the MPI, the top 10 countries of origin for immigrants in the United States are in Latin America and Asia. So we know it's in Armadillo is in Latin America. And that's closer to the equator. The countries are closer to the equator there. Leprosy in America from PAHO.org. And it looks like the WHO. Leprosy was reported in 24 countries in the Americas, with more than 100 cases reported each year in the following countries: Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Colombia, Cuba, Dominican Republic, Ecuador, Mexico, Paraguay, and Venezuela. However, 94% of all cases in the region are concentrated in Brazil. Right? So so you get a look at what Brazil is. That's one of the countries they named. Brazil is a South American country that has the most Africans in it. Haiti is second, and Colombia is third. So we got, I'm surprised they got Dominican Republic and don't have Haiti up there, because they're basically the same place. Historically, it was one place, and, you know, they divided up. So that's interesting. But they have two of them up there, right? So that's my spill on leprosy, and I'm going to go right on to something. Man, that took longer than I thought. Sorry about that, y'all. So, statin is the next thing I want to talk about. Does the use of statins place you at risk of heart attack? How do statins work and lower cholesterol? What do they do from Healthline? Statins work in two ways. They reduce your cholesterol number, and they stop the production of cholesterol, right? Statins block the enzyme that creates cholesterol. Reduced production lowers the amount of cholesterol available in your bloodstream. Statins help reabsorb existing cholesterol. Your body needs cholesterol to perform certain tasks. It just seems like cholesterol gets a bad rap. From UCLAHealth.org. Coenzymes, Q10. Ubiquinone, right? This coenzyme is needed for energy production within muscle cells. Some studies have shown that statins decrease the concentration of CoQ10 in both muscle tissue and in the bloodstream. This hypothesis is that if you decrease the CoQ10 level, you reduce the production of energy in muscle cells, and they won't function as well, leading to muscle aches, weakness, and inflammation. All right, so that can lead to death right there, right? So statins from nhsinformation.scot. Statins. Statins are a group of medicines that can help lower the level of low-density lipoprotein, LDL, cholesterol in the blood. LDL cholesterol is often referred to as the bad cholesterol, and statins reduce the production of it inside the liver. All right, so from the Mayo Clinic, statins are drugs that can lower your cholesterol. They work by blocking a substance your body needs to make cholesterol. Right? So statins work by blocking the substance your body needs to make cholesterol. Lowering cholesterol isn't the only benefit associated with statins, they say, right? So they have been linked to lower risk of heart disease and stroke. So lowering cholesterol has been linked to lower risk of heart disease and stroke. These drugs may help stabilize the plaques on blood vessel walls and reduce the risk of certain blood clots, right? Then he went to a bunch of names, Lipitor, Lexapro, XL, Alextoprev, Livelo, Provacil, Crestor, Zocor. Those little names are, they have different other names. I'm not even going to get into that. Also from NIH.gov, right? They said aging leads to a natural decrease in the levels of COQ10 as a result of decreased synthesis and increased degradation, and this deficit cannot be compensated by diet. Primary deficiency is associated with deficits in genes directly involved with the biosynthesis of COQ10 from Science Direct. Coenzyme Q10 is a mitochondrial coenzyme, which is essential for the production of ATP. Being at the core of cellular energy process, it assumes importance in cells with high energy requirements like cardiac cells, heart cells, which are extremely sensitive to COQ10 deficiency produced by cardiac disease. COQ10 has thus a potential role for prevention and treatment of heart ailments by improving cellular bioenergetics, right? Coenzyme Q10 from the Mayo Clinic. Heart conditions. COQ10 has been shown to improve symptoms of congestive heart failure, although findings are mixed. It might help reduce blood pressure. From the NCBI.NLM.NIH.gov, right? Coenzyme is an important factor in the mitochondrial respiration, primary and secondary defenses of coenzyme Q10 result in a number of neurologic and myopathic syndromes. The statin medications routinely result in lowering the coenzyme Q10 levels in the serum, right? So they have some studies have also shown a reduction in coenzyme Q10 in muscle tissue. Such coenzyme Q10 deficiency may be one mechanism for statin-induced myopathies, right? However, coenzyme Q10 supplements have not been shown to routinely improve muscle function. So they give you supplements if you have the statin. If you use statin, they give you coenzyme Q10 supplements, and they're not that dependable or routinely improve muscle function, because the statins are going to lower the body's ability to produce this coenzyme Q10, right? Myopathies are a heterogeneous group of disorders primarily affecting the skeletal muscular structure, metabolism, or channel function, right? So this coenzyme Q10 is a lipid compound with 10 units and is widely distributed in the human body. It is a lipophilic inner mitochondrial membrane cofactor that is used to shuttle electrons in the formation of ATP. The compound is synthesized in a number of reactions from mevalonic acid, which production itself is inhibited by hydromethyl glutenary coenzyme A, right? And I'm getting a little too deep into that right there. So deficiency states of coenzyme Q10. Multiple studies have shown that statins can decrease coenzyme Q10 levels. A portion of this decrease is related to the decrease in the levels of its lipoprotein transport carriers, which is induced by the therapeutic effect of the statin. So the thing you've taken for the heart of the cholesterol can have an impact on this your body's ability to create, to generate, or coenzyme Q10 levels, which help the muscles, right? Your heart is a muscle, right? So animal studies have revealed both tissue and blood levels of coenzyme Q10 after statin therapy in the dog model, hammer model, squirrel model, hamster model, squirrel model, monkey models, mini pigs. Man, they got mini pigs? Or is that guinea pig? Mini pigs. Oh, anyway, mini pigs. In humans, exposure to a statin, 80 milligrams of the atorvastatin, 80 milligrams for 14 to 30 days caused a significant reduction in the coenzyme Q10 levels of 34 subjects, both at day 14 and at day 30. Baseline levels of coenzyme Q10 decreased from 1.26 to 0.67. What's that? UG/ml at 14 days and to 0.6 to UG/ml to 30 days at 30 days. So although serum levels and the coenzyme Q10 routinely decrease with statin therapy, not all studies confirm the potential mitochondrial dysfunction induced by statins. In humans, they found no change in high energy phosphate levels and coenzyme Q10 levels in muscle biopsies from patients before and after treatment with simvastatin 20 milligrams / D for 6 months. The results did not differ from the muscle biopsy findings or match controls taken at the same time. Aging appears to play an important part in the role causing low levels of coenzyme Q10. Older animals may be particularly affected by statin-induced coenzyme Q10 deficiency. So what that's saying is that if you're older, you already decreased in creating this coenzyme Q10. Then you take this statin, which also has an impact on it. So that sounds like they attribute to aging, but how do you know if it's not the statin is not and aging is not contributed to it? Exercise may also induce a relative coenzyme Q10 deficiency because of increased demand on the mitochondria for ATP production. Oxidative stress, also found in testing after vigorous exercise, may cause depletion of muscle levels of coenzyme Q10. Such exercise results in increased uptake of coenzyme Q10 by the muscle. So that's tricky right there. That sounds like exercise, which everybody recommends. It's good for you. Sound like it's your body uses this COQ10, like it's using it up or something. I don't know. Not a doctor. But statins do lower it also. Which brings me to, if it does it, why do you give it to people for heart problems? That's my question. Elderly people appear to be at greater risk for statin-induced myopathies, which can occur up to 11% of these patients, right? What I just said, right? So You know, so I guess that's a double whammy if you're older and you're taking statins. Statins are commonly used in medications in the elderly, given the high incidence of medical problems such as diabetes, cerebrovascular disease, and cardiovascular disease in this population. I don't know. In summary, they say coenzyme 10 is an important component of the mitochondrial biochemistry, allowing for production of ATP, HMA, COA, reductase inhibitors, or statins inhibit one of the key steps in coenzyme Q10 synthesis. So I don't, why would you give it to somebody elderly then? I don't, you know, not a doctor, and I don't play one on television, but that sounds like the medical industry is robbing Peter to pay Paul. So I'm going to treat you with this, but it's going to cause you to have something else. And that's not okay, unless you're just trying to get rid of the elderly. These drugs have been associated with a reduction of serum and muscle tissue, coenzyme Q levels, and may play a role in statin-induced myopathy, given the low risk of toxicity and the potential benefit in treating statin-induced myopathy. The trial of 200 milligrams of coenzyme Q10 daily should be considered for these patients. So you have to, and they said it's not consistent, the supplement, but I guess that's better than nothing. So get statins. They're going to, it's going to lower your body's ability to produce this coenzyme Q10. And I guess they give you supplements to help you to supplement that. The elderly appear to be more susceptible to the Q10 deficiency. Athletes who require the most efficient use of oxygen consumption by mitochondria for athletic performance are also susceptible to mitochondrial dysfunction due to the coenzyme Q10 deficiency. However, study results have been conflicting regarding the uniform effectiveness of coenzyme Q10 sublimation. Oh my God. So the studies are conflicting regarding the effectiveness of this coenzyme Q10 supplementation, but it's all you got. So I'm thinking you just might as well take it. It's better than not taking it. They need something else besides this statin thing to help with this cholesterol and the buildup in your diet. Maybe teaching people how to eat to live would help prevent that. You know, or is it the goal just to treat people's illnesses? Is that where we headed? Is that where we are now? Just these guys are just interested in treating your illness, not really in preventing illness or eradicating illness. They just want you to live sick, and we're going to treat you for that, and you're going to get sick, and then we're going to treat you for that, then that's going to cause you to get sick, then we're going to treat you for that. You're going to keep piling this stuff up on each other. I guess I'm saying something's wrong with this picture, the way that we practice medicine in this country. It doesn't seem healthy, even though it's supposed to be for your health. And I'm not, petrochemicals have I think they do have a place, you know, because they, like for emergency situations and things like that. But, you know, we should learn how to live healthy and so that we avoid certain situations that are a direct result of our consumption. You know, our food should never be causing us to die. And that's what we're talking about, basically. So we need to learn how to eat to live, not live to eat. And I know that's hard to do because we're not trained to do that. We're trained to fulfill our wishes and desires of our palates. And I get it. But that's going to kill you in the long run. It's going to cause you all these disease and illnesses and things like that. And if it doesn't, thank God or whoever you pray to. Anyway, this is called Robbing Peter to Pay Paul. Is this the best we can do, or is this just the way, you know, as I said, we make money in this country? Is that what's going on? We just, you know, making that money off of sickness. Is this, you know, I probably need to do a show on, you know, the medical field, and if it's trying to, if its main your goal is to heal you and to eradicate disease, or is its goal to treat disease, keep you alive and as long as they can, and treat disease and, you know, generate money through that whole process? I don't know. There's much more to this that story than I can say tonight. In a night, really. So I'm going to move on to the global health security of talking about immunizations and the good old CDC. We're going to talk about vaccines, right? So I saw it in the YouTube. This lady was talking about vaccines increasing after the vaccine makers were legally not held responsible. You can't sue the vaccine maker for any defect in its product. So I just looked for, I just did a little research on vaccines real quick. Why vaccines, the theory behind vaccines, they prevent an estimate, they say, 2.5 million deaths among children younger than 5 years of age every year. Still, one child dies every 20 seconds from a disease that could have been prevented by a vaccine. So, it was hard to find information about them. And you know, they had the bears tracking. Hard to find something with somebody who's actually going to say these kids actually died from the vaccines. You got to look a little harder for that. From GAVI.org, more than 2 million children continue to die each year from vaccine-preventable diseases, they said, right? By far, the biggest vaccine-preventable killers of children are pneumonia and diarrheal diseases, said Julian LaViette, a reception held at the Alliance headquarters, right? Said it's unacceptable, right? Deaths reported to the vaccine adverse event reporting system, right? This is the your child gets the vaccine. Say you get your child gets the vaccine and dies. All this, report that. Say we just got this vaccine and my kid got sick and died. Report it to the vaccine adverse event reporting system. You can do that on your computer. BBC reports of death after vaccination reports to the bears, right? From 1997 to 2013, bears received 2,149 death reports. The median age was 0.5 years. I don't even understand that. Males accounted for 1,226% of the reports. So did the number of vaccines increase since companies were made non-liable for, you know, accountable for deaths due to the design of the vaccine in 1983, right? So people seem to think that was the case, but the case that, you know, there was an increase of suggested, recommended, mandatory vaccines after the vaccine companies were made non-liable for their design deficits that caused death, right? Which is crazy. Because if I design something, a car, the brakes go out after you use them 30 times, I'm responsible for that. Or engine blows up, I'm responsible. It's my design, and it, you know, especially if I know about it. But it seems to me that with these vaccines, that they already anticipate some people getting the vaccine and dying, and it's acceptable. To me, that's unacceptable. Unacceptable to anticipate death with a vaccine because people are not taking their child to get a vaccine to kill them. So that whole mode of training of thought is basically anti-life, and it's experimental at that. Anyway, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of protecting vaccine makers from state lawsuits, they said. And I said, man, what's going on here? So I've talked about this on another show. The United States Supreme Court reached a decision recently concluding that federal law protects vaccine makers from product liability lawsuits that are filed in state courts and seek damages for injuries or death attributed to the vaccine. Of Justice Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court explained that the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986 preempts all design defect claims against vaccine manufacturers brought by plaintiffs seeking compensation for injury or death caused by vaccine side effects. So this is what your Supreme Court thinks. I think the people should have voted on that, because you're telling everyone to get vaccinated. Eight people or nine people should not be able to make that decision. The court's 6-2 decision reasoned that a vaccine side effect could always have been avoidable by use of a different vaccine not containing the harmful element. The language of the NCVIA thus suggests the design is not subject to question in a action. So basically, that's the same, because I say so, it is so, right? That's why the people should vote on that. The Supreme Court, this should not have been a Supreme Court issue, because the people would have shot this down, because you know, nobody is going to want to not be compensated for being duped into taking their child to be injured. And some people are going to want a little more than that. Anyway, this conclusion is supported by the fact that although product liability law establishes three grounds for liability: defective manufacture, inadequate directions or warnings, and defective design. The act mentions only manufacture and warnings. It thus seems that the act's failure to mention design defect liability is by deliberate choice, not inadvertence. They could have added that on there at the Supreme Court, at that. They could have added that onto that. They could have amended that. What do you mean? Just in your decision. Liability is liability, no matter what part of the process it is. But this is what these fools do, and they get away with it. The opinion further explained that design defects do not merit a single mention in the Act or in Food and Drug Administration regulations that pervasively regulate the drug manufacturing process. Of course not. This is so fraudulent. It's crazy. As a result, the court, it's not fraudulent. It's just in cahoots. This is conspiracy, y'all. As a result, the court concluded that this lack of guidance for design defects, combined with the extensive guidance for the two liability grounds specifically mentioned in the Act, strongly suggests the design defects were not mentioned because they are not a basis for liability. Now, what fool would say that? Now, what parent or caring person would say some stuff like that? There are people who don't even get vaccines for this type of reason, this type of nonsense. They say Scalia's opinion further reflected the belief that the Vaccine Act reflects a sensible choice to leave complex etymological judgments about vaccine design to the FDA and the National Vaccine Program rather than injuries. That's evil genius. No, it's just evil. Basically, telling the National Vaccine Program to shut up. The Act's failure to mention design defect liability is suspicious and by deliberate choice, not inadvertence. Even more, to not include design defect is suspicious, deliberate, irresponsible, and criminal. Based on the concept of government being by the people, for the people, the best interest of the people is not being preserved by the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986. It actually protects the vaccine manufacturers, not the citizens of the United States. That is treasonous. These are children. The FDA is incompetent, liable, and in collusion with the vaccine makers, not doing their job if they approve of a vaccine that places children, people at risk at no consequence to the vaccine maker. No consequence results in no deterrent, which results in an increase in the introduction of harmful substances to the public. What makes this more egregious is how little concern they have for children and adults. That is a recipe for collusion and conspiracy. Article went on to talk about the family that brought the lawsuit against now Pfizer. Go read about all Pfizer's lawsuits, the maker of one of the COVID vaccines. Tell me if that a person you would go to that had that many lawsuits going up against them with products they know was harmful. Argued that their daughter suffered seizures as an infant after her third dose of diphtheria tetanus poliovirus, or DTP vaccine in 1992. She had serious development delay, that a safer alternative had been available, but not made available. Eventually, the vaccine was taken off the market in 1998 and replaced, right? Pfizer argued that the Supreme Court ruling in favor of the family would have sparked countless lawsuits, including some claiming links to autism and threatened a supply of childhood vaccine. Isn't that blackmail? You can't make something that's safe. All right, that was just saying. This is why you shouldn't be dependent on independent private industry. One of the rationales for the Supreme Court decision came from the fact that vaccine manufacturers fund from their sales an informal, efficient compensation program for vaccine injuries, right? So they got a pot of money where you can go get some money from, right? Not from them. In exchange, they avoid costly tort litigation and the occasional disproportionate jury verdict. That's some big wins, you know, like, yeah, give them $20 million. They don't get that, right? So you got to go to these. They already got it set up, so you only getting so much money from them, and you ain't getting it directly from them, right? According to the article from Rutgers, the vaccine court has awarded more than $1.8 billion for vaccine injury claims in nearly 2,500 cases since 1989. Can we say something's wrong with this picture? It's just by the grace of God that we have survived these vaccines. After the ruling, American Academy of Pediatrics president, old Marion Burton, applauded the Supreme Court's decision in a statement. So this is a guy that's supposed to be looking after children. He applauded that. He noted that the decision protects children by strengthening our national immunization system and ensuring that vaccines will continue to prevent the spread of infectious diseases in this country. The AAP, along with 21 other physicians and public health organizations, submitted a brief supporting wake and noted that a ruling against the manufacturer could precipitate the same crisis that Congress sought to avert in passing the Vaccine Act. The very real responsibility of vaccine shortages, and in turn, increasing numbers of immunized children and perhaps a resurgence of preventable disease, fear, right? So they push fear. Ultimately, the decision could have significant impact on similar vaccine suits associated with disease such as autism. So that's a, you know, they're having this conversation about vaccines and autism, and they don't want to be sued. They don't want to be, they don't want to come out and be what they call transparent with what's happening. They want to, you know, they want to, no, that's not us. It's not our vaccine. Our vaccine is safe, right? Now, we see what's happened with the COVID vaccine, right? Things that have occurred since then, right? They say, you know, everybody would love that, most people would love to have a vaccine against COVID when they first heard about it, you know, but they wanted to be safe. Now, that's not an anti-vaxxer. That's a pro-lifer. So, you know, they try to slander people and demonize them for wanting to be safe. That's wrong. This genius thinks it's better to prevent infectious diseases than to prevent the death, debilitation of children. I thought that was the purpose of the vaccine. He goes on with some double talk about protecting children when the act actually protects the vaccine makers from defects in their product, right? For being sued for defects in their product, right? The vaccine court has awarded more than $1.8 billion for vaccine injury claims in nearly 200,500 cases since 1989. That's a lot of people. That's alarming. Pfizer is only concerned about countless lawsuits instead of eradicating the defect they threaten the protection of their compromised vaccines that threaten the protection of their compromised vaccines. So Pfizer is just worried about Pfizer. And, you know, we made all these vaccines, put money in this. We got to make this money back. You understand what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, we got to put this stuff out there. Get our money. People who do not care about the safety of other people should not be responsible for the lives of people. This is a recipe for a violation of the Nuremberg Code and should be a violation of the criminal code. It is most definitely a violation of the moral and ethical code, but if you don't have any morals or ethics, that doesn't matter. So, vaccines required in 1983 from PubMed. Let's see. They got BCG vaccine, measles, mumps, polio virus, rabies, rubella, thyroid, parathyroid vaccines. I don't even know what that is. From the Iowa Clinic. Ever since your child needs, every vaccine your child needs from birth to graduation. They said your kid will get more than 50 shots before they enter adulthood. That's a lot of needles. And then they had a chart of the vaccines, which I'm not, I don't even have time to go over that. That's about an hour, just that in itself. So anyway, in 1962, there were five doses. 1983, four vaccines, 24 total doses. 1986, what happened? In 1986, to trigger such an increase in the recommended vaccine schedule, the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, they said, remove legal and financial liability from vaccine manufacturers for injury and death caused by vaccines on childhood schedule, right, on the vaccine schedule. So basically they said, yo, don't worry about it. Just put something out there and we ain't going to charge. We ain't going to hurt y'all. Put some money over here and that's all they going to get and don't worry about it. It's unbelievable. I counted at least 18 vaccines in my little short, my search, before the age of 18. The Iowa Clinic counts 50. That is a lot of shots. Are they all necessary? That's the question. Are all of these shots preventing life, of saving life? How many people are being affected by these shots? Anyway, the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986 was enacted by Congress. The act required health providers and vaccine manufacturers to report to the Department of Health and Human Services specific adverse events following the administration of measles, mumps, rubella, polio, phthisis, diphtheria, and tinnitus vaccine, and any combination thereof, right? This is an unofficial indictment of vaccine makers acknowledging that vaccines have adverse effects, but they will handle it in-house. It is the old, the ends justify the means for the greater good. The question is, the greater good, profit, or is the greater good profit or good health? One thing is for sure, the vaccine makers get the green light to push their product on citizens in the name of the citizens impacted by the vaccine's adverse effect. The answer is yes. Not sometime after, some way, somehow, vaccine makers appear to have increased the number of vaccines children are expected to take they are not accountable for. Pimping is easy. From J.B. Haley, this is a guy, a businessman whose son was diagnosed with autism, and he found a website, the Generation Rescue, with his wife. It's an autism advocacy site that has been highly effective in organizing community of parents concerned about an autism vaccine link. He stated that only two vaccines were viewed and one out of 30 ingredients studied to determine if vaccines cause autism. That was from a PBS highlight. Forever Chemicals. This right here, I guess, all natural, simply tropical juice has high toxic PFAS levels in it. Go figure. In January 19, 2023, Coca-Cola claimed juice was healthy despite toxic forever chemical levels hundreds of times above federal limits, suit says. Here's the catch to that. They got a federal limit for toxic forever chemicals. That's wrong. Did y'all hate to see what's going on with government? That's not for the people, by the people. That's for the corporation, for the oligarchs, by the corporation, for the oligarchs, right? Lawsuit Information Center said a new consumer class lawsuit recently filed against Coca-Cola alleged that the company falsely markets its Simply Tropical juice as all natural while failing to disclose that they contain high levels of PFAS per a polyfluoroalkyl substances, are harmful chemicals that have been linked to various health problems, an official website of the United States government, right? At least 45% of the nation's tap water is estimated to have one or more types of chemicals known as forever chemicals in the PFAS, according to the new study by the U.S. Geological Survey. There are more than 12,000 types of PFAS, right? PFAS, right? Not all of which can be detected with current tests. The USGS study tested for the presence of 32 types. PFAS are a group of synthetic chemicals used in a wide variety of common applications in the linings of fast food boxes, and nonstick cookware to firefighting foams and other purposes. High concentrations of PFASs may lead to adverse health risks in people, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Sounds like them guys might be doing their job, but unable to do their job. It's unaffected. They are unaffected. Their presence in the environment and prevalence across the country make them a unique water quality concern. All right, we all drink water. The study estimates that at least one type of these PFAS of those that are monitored could be present in nearly half the tap water in the U.S. That's just the ones that's monitored. PFAS concentrations were similar between public supplies and private wells. Most of the exposure was observed near the urban areas and potential PFAS sources. So 75% in rural areas and about 25% found in urban areas. From Green Matters, according to the EPA, PFAS chemicals, also known as polyfluoroalkyl substances, are a group of man-made chemicals that have been used in a number of industries to protect products since the 1940s. Wow, we're doomed. Chemicals are contained in this group, along with many others that scientists don't seem to know much about. Man. How many are there? Man, they indicate there are 9,252 chemicals under this category. Man, we are screwed. The National Institute of Environment and Health Science has isolated several of the most prevalent of these, right? Here what you see in grease-resistant paper and other fast food wrappers and containers, right? Microwave popcorn bags, pizza boxes, candy wrappers, plastic water bottles, non-stick cookware, y'all know what I'm talking about? All right, cleaning products, you like to be clean, right? Stain-resistant coating and carpets and upholstery. Yeah, that was good stuff, right? You spilled your wine on it, you wiped it right off, right? Stain-resistant and water-resistant clothing, all right? That's your raincoats, your umbrellas, and most worrying of all, drinking water. So we got plastic water bottles, and it's in the water. Toilet paper is an unexpected source of PFAS in water supplies in a water supply study. What? And let me see. This is ACS.org. It says toilet paper from around the world contains low levels of PFAS, likely contributing these forever chemicals to wastewater. What are forever chemicals? And see, this is a nightmare to me. It seems like we're just living in a madman's, mad scientist laboratory, test tube, or chamber. And like people just doing what they want to do to us. I said, mainly because we sleep, we're sitting on our hands, or we are self-satisfying ourselves. And we go with the flow, like that guy on the Matrix. He wanted to go back into the Matrix. He said, look, I snitch on these guys, but put me back in the Matrix. So some people are just enjoying themselves in the Matrix, and hey, whatever, I feel good. They need getting that dopamine rush best way they can. Trips, or getting paid, get the nice house, a nice car, the nice girl, the 6 foot whatever girls like on a dude, you know, all that good stuff, jewelry, you know, just tripping out on that stuff, and not paying attention or caring about everybody, because you got this thing doesn't work. This planet doesn't function right if we're all warring against each other. This is war. Anytime somebody puts something out there that kills you, that's war. If somebody came over here and was shooting Americans, you would be alarmed. Why aren't we alarmed? People putting products out that debilitates and kills, sickens Americans. Why isn't that seen as much of a threat as Russia? Russia's not doing that to us. These are Americans doing this to us. That's treason. Why are they bad? Agency for Toxic Substance and Disease Registry can harm the liver, reproductive, and the renal system. The liver, the heart, liver, reproductive, and renal systems. Man, evidence that they increase cholesterol levels and increase blood pressure and pregnant women, leading to birth defects and dangerous conditions such as preeclampsia, can even change liver enzymes and decrease the vaccine response in children. Here it is. Commonly, PFAS chemicals are most commonly found in food, right? This generally occurs through contamination from soil or water, the packaging or containers, equipment that was used to work with the food. PS also found compounds used to make products stain-resistant, water-resistant, non-stick, right? Carpet, apparel, stuff like that. When those chemicals are released during normal use, the facilities that make them through natural biodegradation or during disposal of the product. So this is just happening. It's going down. Nothing we can say or do about it. First, your first tag is to clean house at the FDA for allowing this toxin to be used in products designed for human consumption or use. No matter how they get there, this is totally irresponsible, negligent, and criminal. Toxin means poison. Forever means always. In this case, we will never live to be rid of this poison unless by some miracle it can be eradicated. Second, the people should take control of all industries, advertising and selling products with forever chemicals, and all parties involved in its manufacturing, distribution, and sale should be held accountable. All books, documents, ledgers, records, and profits should be confiscated in the interest of those who have been exposed directly or indirectly and their descendants or dependents. To knowingly, willfully poison the American public is an act of war and homegrown terrorism. In 1940 is a long time. In fact, it is about 83 years of them poisoning us. This means that they had 83 years to correct, repent, prove that they were not placing our lives in danger and at risk of sickness and death. Does that sound like the FDA cares about the health of American citizens or the healthy pocket of big business, interest groups, and corporations? The fact that so many toxins are manufactured, distributed, and sold speaks volumes to where we really are, who we are blindly trusting, and how sheepish we are. Remember, sheep are exploited for their resources and end up on somebody's table, on somebody's back, on somebody's feet, on somebody's something. Until we the people actually control government, government will never be for the people. Individuals without morals and ethics can always be bought, encouraged to sell out. A good watchdog takes a chunk of flesh out of a threat or potential threat. They are fearless and focused on the task at hand. They will deter threats. The FDA appears to be a conspirator in the poisoning of Americans and those who visit America. Both are monsters, idiots, and or both at the core. Why isn't this being blasted on the media 3 times a day, 7 days a week, like these guys running down the street shooting each other? Americans are under attack, trapped like rats in a laboratory where corporations, interest groups, and individuals profit from our exposure and suffering, and some of us think it's a wonderful world. Something's wrong with that picture. And we're not going to have enough time for me to get to the rest of this stuff. I'm going to try to get to this thing about, well, they say, Bill Gates is supporting mosquitoes being, genetically enhanced mosquitoes being released in Florida. So by this company, what's the name of this company? Orlet something. They say the mosquitoes were allegedly part of a disease control initiative by Bill Gates. The first time there has been, this is from WTRF.com. The first time there's been a local spread in 20 years, there were 4 cases detected in Florida and 1 in Texas. And the Center for Disease has, I forgot to tell you, this is about malaria. They found malaria in Florida. Florida getting hit with a whole lot of stuff. Was that the test state or something? And so they found 5 cases of malaria spread by mosquitoes in the last 2 months. You know, as you know, malaria is spread by a particular mosquito, female of a particular mosquito. So they say they found let's say Bill Gates, Bill and Linda Gates Foundation does not finance U.S. modified mosquito release projects. U.S. modified mosquitoes, according to the Associated Press. There are genetically modified mosquitoes used for release program in Florida, but experts say these insects cannot transmit malaria because they're males. They say that's a false claim about them. The foundation fund supports ways to combat malaria and has not completed mosquito releases in the U.S. So they fund and support ways to combat malaria and has not completed mosquito releases in the U.S., they say, right? The company is Oxitec, O-X-I-T-E-C, which is releasing modified mosquitoes in Florida as a part of a disease control initiative. Oxitec released genetically modified male on some kind of Aedes aegypti mosquitoes, right? Aedes aegypti mosquitoes in Florida Keys to combat insect-borne diseases such as dengue fever and the Zika virus. Says so. What are they inoculating people with mosquitoes? Another medical experiment violation of the Nuremberg Code again? Are they giving? How are they doing this? How are they? You know, are they killing the mosquitoes that's causing the Zika virus, or are they, you know, how does that work? Florida, the four malaria cases were not in the Florida Keys, but in the Sarasota County, they said, right? AP reports that the malaria spread is rare, but has happened before with 11 outbreaks happening since 1992. And the last outbreak in 2003 in Palm Beach County, Florida, had 8 cases. So Bill Gates has been suspected of a few things, but there's no evidence that he sponsored the release of GMO mosquitoes in Florida and Texas. There appears to be circumstantial evidence connecting Bill Gates to this scenario. First, the foundation funds and supports ways to combat malaria. Second, the foundation has supported the biotech company Oxitec. Third, Oxitec released genetically modified male mosquitoes in the Florida Keys. What separates Bill Gates from Oxitec release of GMO mosquitoes is the statement, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation does not finance U.S. modified mosquito release project. If true, you cannot prove collaboration. If you cannot prove collaboration, you cannot prove conspiracy. If Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation does not finance U.S. modified mosquito release projects, it's true. It's a true statement. If funds from the Gates Foundation have not been used, we can't prove support. Those are just statements, and we have to dig a little deeper for concrete evidence to prove involvement. So one may argue that Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's support Oxitec is evidence enough to prove support of something they are in support of, just not in the U.S. So these guys are releasing these mosquitoes to fight a disease. Such as dengue fever and the Zika virus, says AP. Just how are mosquitoes fighting a disease that humans get? Are they inoculate? Are these males? Because they don't bite. You say they male, so they don't, or do they bite or not? Or are they saying that the female mosquito is the only one that that carries the disease? How's that go? Because I was really confused about that whole thing about how mosquitoes are fighting a disease. How they do it? Because it's only one way you can fight a disease. You got to kill the disease carrier or you inoculate, immunize or through inoculation, right? So which are the mosquitoes doing? What are they? That's a serious question right there, running out of time. But we need to be looking at what these people are doing. What do you mean mosquitoes are fighting the Zika virus and dengue virus? How are they doing that? Who are they biting? You know, and are they male mosquitoes? Do they bite? Because if they bite, then they might have malaria. If you send mosquitoes out there to perform a medical procedure, or are they attacking the mosquitoes that transmit these viruses? That, I don't know. I guess I have to look into that and see what the hell is that. That is the most absurd thing I've ever heard. I mean, I don't care who's what kind of scientist says it. You're going to release some GMO mosquitoes. That's bad right there. You don't know what's going to happen, what they're going to evolve into, what they're going to turn into, what kind of whatever thing they're going to do, mating, crossbreeding, and stuff like that with other mosquitoes. You don't know what you just created. And then to help control diseases such as Zika virus, are they going to war with other mosquitoes? Then what are you going to do with these genetic mosquitoes? What do you do with them? Anyway, I'm running out of time. And that's my, I didn't get to the GMO food thing because I ain't have enough time, I guess. So, although, look, they say the GMO is not good for you, all right? So, they connect that to a lot of poor health situations also. So just take that in the hand. I don't have time to get into it. They talked about toxicity, allergic reactions, antibiotic resistance, because they use that, immunosuppression, cancer, you know about that, right? Loss of nutrition, and things like that. So don't have enough time to get into that. Until next week, y'all, each one reach one, each one teach one. Sometimes when you're just sitting around, smoking a joint, staring at the ceiling, wishing you were somewhere else, do your own research. Till next week, y'all. Peace out.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.